Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. For a brief time in the 1990s, a miracle occurred in southern England. It's incredible to me that so few people know about the Skoll Experimental Group. I've been wanting to share the Skoll story with you for years, and today at last we have as our guest a leading member of that extraordinary project. We've got a lot to talk about, so we're going to plunge right in. The Skoll Experimental Group was a physical mediumship circle that sat over a period of 5 years or so, beginning early in 1993, in the village of Skoll in Norfolk, England. Robin Foy and his wife hosted the circle in their basement twice each week, and the phenomena that occurred there were by virtue of their intensity and volume beyond anything that had been previously known. Welcome, Robin, all the way from Spain. I'm so glad to meet you.
Oh, great. Well, it's nice to be here.
This is a fabulous story. I urge people, there's even going to be a movie coming out. Watch for it. But you're going to hear a lot about the Skoll experiment now, 20 years after it happened. But let's begin, Robin, by telling people your story. Can you tell us something about how you even got into this?
Well, basically, I've been in this for 44 years now, an awful long time. And during that time, I've had the opportunity to be involved in many circles. I've sat with many physical mediums, and I've learned a tremendous amount about physical mediumship and physical phenomena. I came into it originally because I was always interested as a child in psychic phenomena. Eventually, I was living in the Midlands in the UK. There was an advert appeared in a paper which simply said, anybody interested in psychic research, please call in and, we'll interview you. And it ended up with me going along to an interview with a guy who ran a physical circle in Leicester in the UK, right in the Midlands. He was getting a little bit of phenomena here and there, but I'd never come across anything before in the way of any psychic things. I knew very little about mental mediumship, and I knew nothing about physical mediumship. We sort of went into this, and I was interviewed with, I think, about was half a dozen other people there, during the course of which the guy said, well, would you be interested in looking at the room that we use? It was a blacked-out room, and it was actually sitting above his garage in an extension that he had. We sort of walked up the stairs in a sort of crocodile to see this room. Now, this place was actually several hundred yards away from any other house and a long, long way from the road. And as I was walking up the stairs, I distinctly heard the sound of a child, a baby crying out in midair. Everybody else that was there heard it too. Now, this obviously was independent voice. And I mentioned it. We went and had a look at the room, and it looked, you know, very, very interesting. And I was invited later on to go back. But I mentioned to the guy whose circle it was that we'd heard this baby crying. And he said, well, maybe that's a sign from spirit. As I went back home, just a week later, my first wife and myself, we had a phone call from an adoption agency saying, we've got a baby for you. So it certainly was a sign from spirit.
Isn't that lovely? But now, we've talked about physical mediumship before in circles, but many people listening don't know what you're talking about. So can you very briefly explain to us what physical mediumship is and why people sit in circles for years and years every week?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's very rare. Generally speaking, when people think about mediumship, they think about mental mediumship. And that means basically clairvoyance, clairaudience, or clairsentience. Now, clairvoyance is when a medium sees spirit people. Clairaudience is when a medium hears spirit people. And clairsentience is when a medium senses spirit people. The thing is that the other people in the room don't hear or see what the medium is hearing or seeing, but the medium can then pass on what they're getting in this mental way, which sometimes they would probably see on the mirror of their mind or hear within their mind what's being said by the spirit people. And all mediumship takes quite a long time to develop, but a good mental mediumship can take 2, 3, 4 years perhaps to develop. Whereas in the past, physical mediumship's taken anything up to 20 years.
Yes.
And
that
physical mediumship generally means where you have a medium who's sitting in a darkened room, who goes into a trance state and produces ectoplasm. That's as we understood it in the past. But what happened at Skoll was totally different. I mean, I've witnessed all these different types of physical mediumship in the last 44 years I've been involved in this. And I mean, I've seen some really fantastic phenomena. My wife and I have actually been in our own home circles where we've built up phenomena in that way. But the newer way has been totally different in that it's only done using three different types of energy, which are blended together by a spirit team to produce what they call a creative energy. And then the spirit team are able to use the creative energy to produce physical results, tangible results, results that can be seen and heard and felt by everybody else that's actually there at the time. For instance, we had a number of teleported spirit people who were actually in the room with us, and anything up to 8 spirit people at any one time, quite solid, moving around the room, touching us, embracing us, talking to us. You know, everything, and we had spirit lights which were visible to everybody, and little lights which were used eventually for healing, and they would go internally.
Robin, these people, they were not made of ectoplasm. I'm used to that, but what were they made of?
They were made of themselves, spiritual essence, which is actually our soul, if you like to call it that.
Oh my goodness, so this was a real advance.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole of the spirit person was being teleported into our room.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they were able to increase their density mentally by using the creative energy that had been produced by using these three different types of energy. And they could then become, by using their minds, they could then become more or less solid.
That's amazing. One of the things that's important for everyone to understand is that the real experimenters here are the people we used to think were dead. And there were some famous names involved at Skoll, as there nearly always are when serious people work with the dead. But what they were doing here was experimenting with willing people who are still in bodies with what they can do in the future. And they're really being very creative. But I never understood that about Skoll. What a wonderful thing. Is it happening other places now with physical mediums, you know?
It is indeed. You know, I've been sort of pushing it and trying to help people to work in the new way. And in fact, our spirit team did write a basic guide, which people can download for a small sum from my website.
What's your website? Say your website.
The website is www.skollexperiment.com.
Wow. One of the things that happened at Skoll that was really extraordinary was that they got something like 80-odd apports. Didn't you? Some large number like that. Explain
it
what
was
an apport is.
No, it was about 120 in total.
Oh. See, all right, I even got that number wrong. Wow, that's amazing. So tell people what an apport is.
Well, an apport is really a small present that's brought by spirit. It can be anything and any size, basically. We had some small apports and some large apports, but these are things that were not in the room when we started our experimental sessions, but which were in the room afterwards. And when an apport arrived, even if it was something small, like a small brooch or a silver charm off a charm bracelet, it would hit the central table with such a large bang, it was like a brick hitting the table.
Wow.
And there was one quite funny one that we had when we'd been talking before we had our session, about monkeys, because there was a program on the television at that time that we'd seen before they all arrived to go in for the sitting. During the course of the session, again, there was a very loud bang on the central table, we realized an apport had arrived. When we looked afterwards, it was a very large, about 6 or 8 inches long, carved wooden monkey, just to show they'd been watching the television with us when we were up there before the session.
Oh, my goodness. So what I recall especially being amazed by was the newspapers. Tell us about the newspapers.
Yes, there were two newspapers that we had, actually, and these were special apports because they were almost pristine when they arrived. And yet the dates on them were wartime, 1944-1945. We put them away immediately because, having been myself working in paper manufacturing, I knew that we shouldn't let air get to them, because these newspapers were made of what's known as a mechanical newsprint, which means that they still had the impurities in them, and if you allowed them to be left in the light or sunlight, they would fade or go yellow. And so we put them away immediately. And within a week, even though we put them in airtight boxes, they had certainly yellowed. But the interesting thing about it is that the SBR, the Society for Psychical Research, who investigated Skoll, actually took samples of these newspapers to PIRA, which is the Paper Industry Research Association in the UK, and they were able to say most definitely that because of the fillers and the chemicals within that paper, it was definitely wartime paper from that absolute time.
And it was printed using the kind of print press that they used then, right? I mean, I remember...
Yeah, that was printing by letterpress, which in those days used a very, very raised form of type. With ink put directly onto the type and then onto the newspapers on the big presses. That had been printed by letterpress, which has virtually disappeared totally now.
Now, how did they – did? What I imagine is, because there's no time where they are, they're in the – on the day that thing was printed, they pick it up, they take it into their dimension, and they bring it to this time – and they make it appear in this time, in this dimension. Is that what happens? What happens?
Well, I'm not 100% sure of exactly what happened there. The thing was that they were very interesting because from the point of view of the stories on them, one of the stories in one of the newspapers was about Helen Duncan, the very famous materialization medium, who had been sent to prison in the UK in 1944, prior to the D-Day invasion of France. And the reason for that was that she was actually, sailors from a particular ship had materialized and told their mother that they'd been sunk in that ship, which was a state secret.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Unfortunately, the UK had to stop anybody knowing about it. So she was actually put into prison on the Witchcraft Act, which was a bit nasty, but it happened. The other one, there was a picture of Winston Churchill. Now, he's been a particular friend of mine personally for 44 years.
Well, isn't that lovely? So tell us who were some of the people whose names would recognize that were in spirit working with you?
Well, they weren't all sort of front men, if you like, but amongst the people we had working for us were Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of Sherlock Holmes. We had William Barrett. There was various other people that were well-known scientists that had been involved in this work. And one or two of the people never gave their real names. They worked with a pseudonym purely and simply because they felt that the message they were trying to bring was more important than anybody sort of discussing who they were. And of course, if you simply said, well, I've been speaking to so-and-so, yes, everybody starts to doubt it and say, yes, is it that person or not?
But one of them was Edison, right?
Yes, most certainly. He was working with us, but he wasn't in contact with us on a regular basis. However, he was the scientist that actually designed for us a little piece of equipment which we knew as the TDC. And that stood for the Transdimensional Communication Device. He actually put details of it, a blueprint of it, on a film that had never been opened, still in its shop wrapping, and we left it there during our session, and it was developed immediately afterwards. And on there was the blueprint of this little device.
So let's set the scene here. New film on a table. The box hasn't, or the little wrapper on the film has never been opened. It's simply there. And then when it's later developed, it's found that it has drawings, it's got writing. I've seen in the book about this phenomenon, and in the article that was originally published, it's astonishing what was there. So
I mean, eventually the scientists who were researching our work got in touch with the Edison Institute, who supplied them with a memo that had been initialed by Edison in 1926. And his initials were identical to the ones that were on the film that had never been sort of used.
Isn't that amazing? Dr. Edison was a really, I think, to people who look from the outside, he was an important part of this because of what he produced on sealed film and because of his machine. Now, tell us more about the machine. This was for communication. Tell us what happened.
Well, the blueprint, when we received it, it's actually a very small piece of equipment. It measures about the same size as a matchbox, perhaps, did when matches were sort of were all made of wood. But inside it were a couple of coils and a small sliver of metal called germanium. And he told us exactly how this thing should be built. It was eventually built by students of the researchers who were investigating Skull, and we used it constantly. It was plugged purely and simply into the amplifier of a cheap tape recorder so that any words that were spoken through this could come out as a sort of hearing directly. Eventually, we started to have all sorts of weird and wonderful noises coming out of this thing over several months. And then eventually, we got the voice of Thomas Edison himself speaking to us. And he spoke to us for 15 minutes about the work and what they were doing.
Oh, my goodness. Do you see what's happening, everyone? They are experimenting. And frankly, the Skull Sitters were their lab assistants. They said, here, make this for us. So it was made for them, and then it was put on the table, and over time they experimented with it, the people that we used to think were dead, and then they made it work. So that's a wonderful example of what can happen when we work with spirit.
And not only that, but this piece of equipment eventually enabled us not just to link with the spirit world, but also to link with other dimensions. And included in this piece of equipment was what they called the IDOLIS system. And this really stood for Interdimensional Oral Language Interpretation System, so that the beings that were able to speak to us eventually through this system obviously didn't have any English as such, but because of the IDOLIS within this interpretation bit, they were able to speak to us through the bit of equipment, and it was quite amazing to do that.
Have you recorded what they said? Do you have that on recording?
There are some recordings now. There's 1,000 hours of our sittings that were all recorded, but none of them so far have been made available to the public.
Oh, my goodness. So what did they say? Where were they from? What did they say to you?
Well, we talked about all sorts of things, and they were from all different types of dimensions. But, I mean, it wasn't just that, because eventually we actually had beings from other dimensions that were teleported into the room. Most people will have seen beings sort of known as greys. Well, the ones that came to us or were teleported into our room were blue. But nevertheless, they were there, quite solid. They picked up our hands. They were very, very loving beings. They picked up our hands and placed them on their heads so we could feel that they weren't 100% human. But as for loving energy, it was absolutely fantastic.
So did they look like the greys, these skinny guys with big eyes?
Yeah, they did indeed. In fact, you know, there's one picture you'll have seen somewhere of the Skoll experiment where Blue, and we actually captured him on a video camera during our sessions. Now, the picture you see is a still picture, but it was actually captured in video and it was totally animated.
Oh, my goodness. That is amazing. Okay, I don't know that we can top that. Where did the spirit team want to take this? Did they tell you what this was, where they were heading with this?
Well, they had an aim. They wanted to prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that life goes on after death. That's what it was all about, and they were aiming eventually to be able to have teleported spirit people in full light. But spirit lights that they brought themselves. So they were experimenting with all different types of spirit lighting to try and get the best spirit lighting for us to see them in. And the eventual aim, of course, was to have all of this in full light.
That is incredible. Okay, well, now, who were the scientists who were investigating this? Can you tell us briefly who they were?
Well, there were three main scientists that sat with us on a regular basis for about 2 years. One of these was Arthur Ellison. He was a radionics scientist and professor. Another one was Professor David Fontana, who actually I think was a psychologist. And the third one was Monty Keane, who was an agronomist and a farmer. And all of these had been members of the Society for Psychical Research for many years. And it was quite surprising because that society has always been known for its skepticism where physical mediumship is concerned. And these three actually brought out a publication after their investigation, virtually totally endorsing the Skoll experiment.
Of course, because it was real, and they were honest people. And Monty Keane is now a big shot among the spirit beings working with living people. So he's sort of seen it all from both sides now. This is boggling. Now,
absolutely. I mean, we used to laugh because we know that some of you guys over there, you know, are sort of sitting behind massive, great sort of radar screens, etc., trying to contact other worlds. And we had this silly little tape recorder and a TDC machine, and we were doing it there and then.
Were these people from our dimension, or were they from other dimensions, so that they were what we would think of as the astral levels?
Mean, you would call them extraterrestrials. They were from other dimensions, certainly.
Wow.
But I mean, that was in addition to the spirit world, where most of our communications were with the spirit world itself.
Even those of us who have done a lot of research don't know a fraction, a tiny, less than tenth of what's actually going on. And it all fits together, but it's a much more gigantic puzzle than any of us can even comprehend. So as in general, the scientists who, the three, and these are very skeptical scientists from the SPR, they said, okay, this is real.
Well, they did. I mean, they wrote a report for the SPR called the Skoll Report. And that is still in print, I believe. You know, it's available in various places. But it's unheard of for SPR scientists to actually endorse physical mediumship. And I think Skull was probably the first time that it actually happened as such.
Can you tell us why it ended? It ended after 5 years. Let me just say there are rumors around the network about why it ended, and I'm eager to hear it from you.
Yeah, most certainly. It's not as complicated as a lot of people think. Basically, our spirit team, and we were talking to them all the time, and they always asked us before they did anything with us. They never demanded anything of us. It was always a question of they requested it of us, or they asked us to do something. But basically, they asked if we would allow them to go as far with the experiments as they possibly could. And of course, we said yes. You know, we always did everything that they asked because we got better results that way.
Yes.
They carried on experimenting all the time, and we were getting more and more stuff. It was getting more and more complicated, and more and more evidence was coming through of the afterlife, etc. Eventually, we got a situation where we lost touch with our spirit team. And this apparently happened because there were a research group, rather like our own circle, in our own future, who every time that we came together were trying themselves to contact us using what was known as a crystal probe. And unfortunately, that really disrupted everything that we were doing. We got a rather loud screeching noise coming from the crystals that we had on the table. Of course, this brought the mediums out of trance. We lost contact totally with our spirit team. And eventually, the last few sittings we had, we got some wonderful pictures on the video of a spirit being who called himself Varun Heerick. He explained to us, we think actually he was a lord of the cosmos, and he explained to us that we'd lost contact, and it was because of these characters from the future. But because of that, we'd lost contact permanently with our spirit team. And so they said, you know, they tried for a number of weeks to actually get contact back to and put a patch on it all to fix it, but they couldn't. And in the end, this chap had to finally come. And we saw his image on the video, and he was speaking to us through the TDC device directly. He just simply said, unfortunately, we're awfully sorry, but we have to close it down. What you have to know is that you've done some wonderful work for mankind, and that work will be continued through other groups. So that was that.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Now, what I had heard was that these people from the future were trying to time travel into their past. That's what the rumor was. So it was only that, do you know who these people were, or when they were calling from?
We've got no idea who they were, but we were told eventually by this Varun Heerick that there'd been a mistake made in a way, because our spirit team had actually created a portal on our table in the middle of the room that spirit people could teleport through. And this portal had actually been made slightly wider than they would normally have bothered to do, so that we might contact spirit people up to 10 years ahead of our time. And what had happened was that they'd made this portal slightly too wide, so that in actual fact, it ran about 115 to 120 years ahead of us. And we were told, therefore, that any information that came from the future would not be allowed to reach us. And I think that's why probably it all came to an end.
That's the origin of the rumor then. Oh, my goodness, that is so amazing. But they said you can't start over, new situation.
Well, not with that particular team and the four sitters. It was the four sitters' energy, the four of us together, that created this whole energy that they needed. And unfortunately, when the four of us came together, whenever the four of us came together, this same energy will come together and make things impossible.
Oh, okay.
They've gone on to do their own experiments now back in the UK. We've gone on here, and I mean, we have the occasional sitting, but we don't get anything like we had in the past.
This is just so interesting. You've put together a number of pieces that, because I found this tantalizing, but now it makes more sense to me than it ever did before. I hope everyone listening understands that what you're hearing is something extraordinary. Robin, what's the Noah's Ark Society?
Well, the Noah's Ark Society was a society that I formed myself personally. I founded it in 1990 because I'd been sitting in a circle where we got Independent Voice and Spirit, a guy called Noah Zerdin, who had been involved with physical mediumship in his lifetime, asked if we would start a society to rescue physical mediumship. Because at that time, in 1990, it was in great danger of actually disappearing altogether, becoming extinct. So that's exactly what we did. We got up and started a society. The original members were just the members of that circle, but it very, very quickly became widespread. And we found two physical mediums who demonstrated for us on a regular basis. And we were demonstrating to seminars of probably 100 people. So that was quite fantastic. We stayed with it until 1994, but then our spirit team at Skoll asked Sandra and I if we would actually leave that society in capable hands and work purely and simply on the Skoll experiment, which they thought was more involved at that time. And that's what we did. But the society itself carried on for another 10 years. And it was finally dissolved by the then president and the vice president. And the president then was a fellow called Cranley, and the vice president was Colin Fry, who was the first medium that we found to demonstrate for us with physical mediumship. And funnily enough, I was actually in the circle where he developed down in Brighton. Because of that, I was able to get his spirit team to agree to come and work with us, with the Noah's Ark Society. I built it up from nothing. Eventually, we had hundreds and hundreds of members around the world.
Wow. Well, for people who are wondering, there is a development now of physical mediumship in the United States. For example, one of the heads of a circle that's developing physical mediumship is our friend R. Craig Hogan. And his circle is, I believe, almost 10 years on. And he has a developing physical medium of considerable talent in his circle. They sit every week. At the Afterlife Research and Education Symposium in September, and we've talked about this before, it's going to be September 15th to 17th, in Scottsdale, Arizona. Just go to afterlifestudies.org and you can find out more about it. But he's going to have a number of members of circles from all over the United States there to talk about developing physical mediumship. This is something that anybody with patience and interest can do. And there are many people with latent psychic abilities. Not all are going to be physical mediums, but in circles, they're also developing very good mental mediums and trance mediums who can do direct voice and other kinds of things. These are lost arts that we're trying to revive. And I think because the veil is getting thinner, don't you? There are more and more people now who are going to be able to do this stuff.
Oh, that's absolutely true. We're seeing more and more of it. There's some wonderful physical mediums evolving. We have an extremely good friend in Germany, Kai Muga,
yes,
who is a fantastic ectoplasmic-based medium. And several others are developing all over the world.
Tell us now, tell us your website again and how people can reach you. And talk a little about your books, please.
Yeah, well, the website where they can buy, if they wanted, the basic guide, which was actually dictated for us by our spirit team, which has helped many groups to actually get phenomena already, is skolexperiment.com. And they can either buy that basic guide there or one of my books, which is called Witnessing the Impossible. And that actually gives every single sitting that we had at Skoll is involved in that book. So it's a very heavy book, but it gives the full picture of everything that happened at Skoll and at the demonstrations we had all over the world. I mean, we did a week in California where we had some very, very good demonstrations. The other book that I wrote, which contains a lot about Skoll, but a lot about us too, is In Pursuit of Physical Mediumship. And the cover of that actually shows a wonderful picture of a red spirit light that I captured on my own camera. And that's available from Amazon.
Oh, my goodness. So this is something which I think everyone is going to want to know more about. When you understand that these things are possible, take it from me, it becomes addicting. You want to know more and more about it. So how would people reach you if they would like to? Do you have a contact block on your website?
Well, I'd be very, very happy for anybody to email me if they want to do that. And my email is yahoo.co.uk.
Okay, I'm writing down that myself. Actually, I think I have it. So you know what? I'm going to try to put it in the notes to this interview. So anyone who wants to contact you can do it. What are you doing next? Just briefly.
Well, we're very, very much hoping, I mean, we have done ever since we got out to Spain, to start a centre, an international centre for physical mediumship. That's our aim. That's really what we're trying to do. It's just a question now of finding how on earth we're going to get the finance for it. But Spirit have for years been telling us the actual premises that they want us to move to, where it would actually be perfect. We've been to this premises and we know it inside out, and not all that long ago it was up for sale. So I think that this is what we're really aiming for.
Well, this is very exciting. I'm thrilled to be able to expose all of you to all this wonderful information, which frankly, most people have no idea about. There's going to be much more to come about this. I'm going to try to have you back maybe in 6 months, Robin. I'd love to be able to talk
with
you.
Yeah, that's fine. Yes, yeah.
And just, you know, we may know more about the movie by then. But clearly, even though you're in a different country now, the world is very small. So I think people in the U.S. need to know you and need to know a lot more about you. So thank you for being with us. I'm delighted to have had you here. We will talk again. Thank you, Robin.
Okay.
I'm thrilled that you joined us today. You heard something amazing. But of course, you're amazing. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really grasp what that means, it's just going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest will be Lisa Smart. She's been carrying on some immensely interesting research called the Final Words Project, and her book, The Words at Words at the Threshold, What We Say As We're Nearing Death, is just out. Many people in their final days will talk about seeing people or pets or glimpses of where they're going and other things. And Lisa's book is just full of wonderful insights. You're really going to enjoy this interview. I hope you'll join us next week. Today, we have been speaking with one of my new favorite people, Robin Foy, all the way from Spain. Robin was an organizer of the Skoll Experimental Group that took place, frankly, all those sittings took place in his basement in the late 90s in Norfolk, England. To this day, it's the most productive collaboration we're aware of between dead and living researchers. And I think it was really the beginning of a whole new world, don't you? There are collaborations going on now between dead and living researchers all over the place to develop electronic communication so good that anyone is going to be able to use it to phone up their dead loved ones. This is a very exciting time to be alive. My own nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, my Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever, and now The Fun of Living Together. They're all available from bookstores on Amazon as audiobooks and in 33 languages worldwide. If you ever want to talk about any of my books, or if you ever want to talk about anything at all, you always can contact me through robertagrimes.com. I do answer every email. I don't know how long I'll be able to do that, but I make a huge effort. Because if you take time to try to contact me, I want to be able to contact you back and answer your questions or just give you a little virtual hug. Recent episodes of Seek Reality are available on boldbravemedia.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Green Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates at xzbn.net. They're available as podcasts on webtalkradio.net, on iTunes, and through our free, get it while you can, free Seek Reality app that you can always find in the iTunes App Store. And if you're ever wondering where Seek Reality can be heard now, just go to robertagrimes.com and click the radio tab. We're going to be leaving BBM, but we love them. They're wonderful people, and we just look for us. You'll find us. As always, I want you to know that I'm very grateful for your friendship. I've devoted the rest of my life to helping to raise the planet's consciousness. And frankly, none of this work would be possible by any of the people who are doing it if we didn't have you. Just your presence, your energy, your voice makes everyone who's doing this work so strong. This is a very important thing we're doing. We are trying to save our planet, literally. I mean, yes, we need to save it from things like climate change, but saving it from destruction by its own inhabitants because their energy has gone so low is our task. And we're now told that we are going to win this battle, and we couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much for being there. Thank you for caring. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.